Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Jai Sri Chaitanya Jaya Nityananda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jaya Gaura Bhakta Vrinda. Jai Advaita Chandra Jai Gaura Bhakta Vrinda.
So Sri Chaitanya Charitamrita, Madhyam Leela, Chapter 20. The Lord instructs Sanatan Goswami. We have two texts. Second text with the purport. And the first text is Krishna Madhurya Sevananda Praptira Karana Krishna Sevakari Ara Krishna Rasa Asvadana. When one attains the transcendental bliss of an intimate relationship with Krishna, he renders service to him and tastes the mellows of Krishna consciousness. Text 127, the text on the board. Yate drishante yache daridare gare. Ihate drishante yache daridare gare. Sarvagya asi dukha dekhi puchaye tahare. Sarvagya asi dukha dekhi puchaye tahare. Ihate drishante yache daridare gare. Sarvagya asi dukha dekhi puchaye dhahare. Somebody else. Ihate drishante yache daridare gare. Sarvagya asi dukha dekhi puchaye tahare. Ladies. Ihate drishante yache daridare gare. Sarvagya asi dukha dekhi puchaye tahare. Ihate drishante yache daridare gare. Sarvagya asi dukha dekhi puchaye tahare. Ihate. In this connection, drishanta, the parable. Yache. Just as daridare gare, In the house of a poor man. Sarvigya, an astrologer. Asi, coming. Dukha, distressed condition. Deki, seeing. Puchaye, tahare, inquires from him. Translation. The following parable may be given. Once, a learned astrologer came to the house of a poor man and, seeing his distressed condition, questioned him. Purport. In the purport, Srila Prabhupada, it's a short purport, but he uses a word about four times, if not five times, and it's already been used twice. So see, can anybody spot the word that Prabhupada repeats a lot of times, which will be the topic of our class this morning. Sometimes we go to an astrologer or palmist when we are in a distressed condition or when we want to know the future. The living entity in conditional life is always distressed by the threefold miseries of material existence. Under the circumstances, he is inquisitive about his position. For instance, Sanatana Goswami approached the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Sri Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, to ask him why he was in a distressed condition. This is the position of all conditioned souls. We are always in a distressed condition, and an intelligent man naturally becomes inquisitive. This position is called Brahma Jignasa. Atato Brahma Jignasa. Brahma here refers to the Vedic literature. One should consult the Vedic literature to know why the conditioned soul is always in a distressed condition. The Vedic literatures are meant to free the conditioned soul from the miserable conditions of material existence. In this chapter, the story of the astrologer, Sarvigya, and the poor man is very instructive. Anybody spot the word? Distressed. Five times. So get ready for a distress class. Om Vigyana Timurandasya Gina Jina Salakaya Chakshurum Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Gurve Namaha Shri Chaitanya Manovistam Stapitam Yena Bhutale Svayam Rupa Kadamayam Dadati Svapadantikam. Iyate santa yachit dadre gare sarvagya asi dukha dekhi puchaye tahare. So the door is open. Forewarning for this class, as the topic is clearly distress. So if anybody is worried about getting distressed, please now leave. Somebody's taking my call. We tend not to like distress. But, like everything else in Krishna consciousness, it's a very multi-layered topic we can talk about. And I think in relation to Jamasi Prabhu's very nice class yesterday, I would call it a call to arms class. as a Sankirtan devotee, he's kind of pushing us. Come on, we've got to take this hearing seriously. We've got to take this chanting seriously. And then give lots of wonderful references from Bhagavatam to say why we have to take this seriously. Come on, call to arms, raise your arms, and do the business. So I'd like to add to that and then also use a little image that Yadnanda Maharaj gave us in his class when he pointed towards the altar on the last day of Kartik. They had decorated the altar with these big red hearts. And inside, Maharaj pointed out, inside the beautiful red heart, you had another heart. But in that heart, there was nothing. It was just empty space. So, Krishna consciousness is about experiencing this empty space that we've created in our heart due to our identifying ourselves with matter. And if we are going to have a call to arms and challenge ourselves to do better and do more, there has to be some impetus. There has to be, what is it that's pushing me forward? What is it? What impels me forward? I think the correct Sanskrit word from the Nectar Devotion would be udipan. There's always some stimulus, always something that's, or in modern language, they'd say springboarding from. In the swimming pool, you have a springboard and you bounce and you bounce and you bounce and it gives you a good jump into the water. So springboard. And it seems there's so many indications that the springboard or the impetus for us to take seriously our Krishna consciousness, as Jamaswami Prabhu was encouraging us yesterday, is to realize this empty space in the heart. Which brings us into the word that we have here. And you could say the position of distress in Krishna consciousness, or the relationship of distress to Krishna consciousness. The story that we're about to hear to the next section of the Chaitanya Charitamrita is Lord Chaitanya talks about the learned astrologer come to see a man in a distressed condition. And it's very similar to a simpler example we use a lot in preaching. If you see somebody hungry, you can give them a nice meal and relieve their immediate suffering. And that's nice, it's a kind act. But if you recognize the person, you see, oh, he's Mr. So-and-so, and he's the son of Mr. Wealthy So-and-so. Give him that knowledge, and he go, and then his hunger's solved forever. So by little knowledge, you can actually help somebody in a greater way. So this example, this analogy that Lord Chaitanya is going to tell, they're connected. Somebody's in a distressed condition, and what the astrologer tells the man is, you dig here, you dig in this area where you are now. The man didn't know that actually his father died many years ago and left treasure in the very place where he is. But then he gives us a few details. Don't dig here, here, or here. Basically, he goes, there's things, there's directions, north, south, south, side, west, side, east, side. The treasure is in one of these directions. But the other three directions, he tells him, don't dig. And the general point is that for someone in distress, they have to approach the Vedas. We have to approach knowledge, and the Vedas are the source of all knowledge to find the relief from our distress. But the Vedas contain so many things. So the analogy would, don't go for the karma kanda, don't go for the jnana kanda, don't go for the yogi section, go straight to bhakti. And then you just get the treasure. And we'll hear there's different comparisons made to snakes and ghosts and wasps and all sorts of nasty things. But the first point is, the story is initiated by the man's in a distressed condition. And Srila Prabhupada in the purport makes reference to a very famous incident of Sanatana Goswami approaching Lord Chaitanya in this inquisitive mood. Why am I suffering? I don't know who I am. I want you to tell me who I am. This wasn't a casual little thing. Thinking, oh, when you get a moment, maybe you can inform me of my real spiritual identity. No, we know there's a fervent passion to the call, to the cry out. And We can wonder, was Sanat Goswami imitating? Was he setting an example? Or was he actually experiencing distress? A type of distress. So we hear about, of course, in the Bhagavad Gita that the four types of people that come to devotional service, one of them is the arthi, the person in distress. And we understand that it's not a pure devotional position to come from, but it acts, the Lord reciprocates with this any endeavor to come forward, with any sense of approaching the Lord. But of course we hear throughout the Shastra continually that the world is a distressed place and everyone's in distress. Every single person in the material world is in distress. Because ultimately everyone's in a place looking for something in a place where it does not exist. How can you not be anything but constantly distressed? It's just not possible. But not everybody's coming to Krishna consciousness. So the distressed person we hear is combined with some sukriti. Some sukriti there. They're distressed and they're directing it towards the Lord. Some understanding that I have to go to God, or in some sense. So that distress, and therefore from that platform, then we take the spiritual life, and then we progress. So that's, I could say, one type of distress, the initiating distress. But that initiating distress, being the platform to take to Krishna consciousness, actually will never go away. That distress, at a stressful state, we can see is always a state where we will then make progress to our next point. And there's a couple of mentions, like when Maharaj Parikshit, after he was hunting in the forest, and he suddenly felt thirsty. And he entered this hut where he saw a sage in meditation, and he asked the sage for some water. He was suddenly very thirsty. But the sage was in such deep meditation that he didn't respond. So we hear Maharaj Parikshit, which was unusual, but still in the pastime, he got disturbed and places a snake around the neck of the sage. But later, we hear different, this has different, we know it's the background to the creation of the Srimad Bhagavatam. But later, an interesting point is Maharaj Parikshit really regretted that. It said that he put him in great distress. He said, what have I done? I was a little thirsty, but I did such an offensive thing by putting a snake around this sage's neck. And so he said he repented and he lamented and he felt distress for his sinful act, of which was the platform for his recovery from this fall down. Prabhupada actually uses the word of fall down in this situation. So when a devotee who's then in the process, throughout our practicing it, we will always be doing something or seeing ourselves do something that we have to actually regret. And regret and distress are very connected. And from that, then the reaction to what we've done gets burned up. It actually gets burned up in the fire of our attitude, basically. The attitude that we say, Krishna, what have I done? How could I have done such an act? And that's why Krishna says in such in very emphatic terms, apichetsa ratra bhajate mam nanda shippam bhagavati dharmatma, that my devotee should never be criticized, even from discrepancy, because he very quickly becomes rectified by his attitude. He just takes up my devotional service again, and very, very quickly his heart is clean, purified again. So we have to be ready to constantly willingly feel some distress. And it raises lots of questions. I couldn't remember the exact story, but we all know, we've heard a number of times how somebody approaches Srila Prabhupada about getting out of Maya, And then Prabhupada answers by, you're always in Maya. And we know the details of that story. There's some story Prabhupada says, you're always in Maya. Oh, somebody said Prabhupada, that's right, okay. And who said that? Oh, yeah, it's one of those, some devotee once said to Prabhupada. Oh, okay, you're right, okay. So Srila Prabhupada, sometimes in Maya, yeah, okay. And Prabhupada said, like in his fatty way, you're always in Maya. So devotees think, well, I'm not doing too bad at the moment. Like, I'm not doing this, I'm not going off there, I'm not, kind of, give me a break. Like, I think I'm not so bad in Maya. But we hear then Prabhupada, he doesn't talk about it too many times, but a number of times he gives reference to Maya's two-factor features of how Maya works. And there are very interesting Sanskrit words that are very hard to pronounce. Avaranapmekshika, I don't even know them, and prapmekshika. They're very difficult words. Even coming back recently in a car journey, we spent, who was it in the car? We were discussing, and I remember Madhagopapa in the car back from Kirtan Mela. We were looking for these two words, and none of us could remember them. Aravanakshmekpika and Pratmap. It's such a big word. But basically, anyway, throwing and covering. The throwing, Maya's throwing energy, and our covering energy. So we can seem to identify that the throwing, basically, when you're thrown out completely, there's a gross entrance into Maya. We are thrown out of Krishna consciousness. But then there's the covering one, which is much more subtle. And which I think we can identify when Prabhupada said, you're always in Maya. Yes, because we're always somehow affected by the covering Maya. We're always somehow covered because we're not really yet so aware of the state of our heart and where we're at. We're so much still covered over. And this is because this is hard work. I was listening to a very nice lecture by Bhakti Vigyan Maharaj, and he explains how the conditions, the living entity in the material world travels through here so many different bodies, and throughout the different bodies, it's all a very natural cycle. It just happens automatically. Move from body to body to body to body to body. But in human life, the evolutionary process changes. It's not automatic. It's consciousness-based. Our evolution is consciousness-based. And that evolution, consciousness-based, means hard work. And he mentioned how, and he said how, but we seem to have difficulty with hard work, especially in Kali Yuga. And he didn't mention it, but of course we know in the Bhagavatam we have the Klavis Minyu Gejana, Sumanda Manda Byagu, Mandu Pyagu Padri Taha, these qualities of Kali Yuga that the atmosphere is thick with, and we're all sadly infested with. And one of them is laziness. And I was thinking, people nowadays aren't really lazy. For the most part, they're working very, very hard. And Srila Prabhupada constantly makes reference, they're working hard. They're working too hard. He said they're working like camels and asses. Like, not that, it's interesting to say, so they're working too hard. So they're not lazy, they're working very hard. But so what does this laziness mean? So this laziness doesn't mean working. This laziness means when you got the human form, now you've got to work with your consciousness to get out of the material world. And you cannot be lazy in relation to that. You've got to work, and work very, very hard. And so as devotees, as practicing devotees, say, okay, we've now come to our initial distress, which for the most part of us brought us all to Krishna consciousness. We were all experiencing some distress. To willing to still ongoing experience the distressful state that we're still in. We have to be willing to undertake that, admit that, and face to it, and then work with it, and then use that as our platform to make my next step in Krishna consciousness. And therefore, our battle with this covering energy, this Maya's covering thing, is to always look and see where I'm at, and my what it is that I have to do next. And usually this means I have to always be a little introspective and look in her heart and see, well, am I actually really exhibiting Krishna consciousness yet? And what was I like when I was looking at the deities? Where was my thoughts? What was my interaction with that devotee like? Always looking at and seeing how I could have been so much better. And these little, always this little, kind of like a slow burning flame of distress should always be there, because that will it keeps us in a prayerful state, always to Krishna, my dear Lord Krishna, please, I desperately need your mercy. And that's another point Maharaj makes. We hear Krishna consciousness is full of mercy, right? We're overwhelmed with mercy. We're inundated by the flood of Lord Chaitanya's mercy and Srila Prabhupada's mercy in giving us Krishna consciousness. But that our job is preparing a platform to receive the mercy. Because our difficulty is we're not even able to, or so unfortunate, again that verse, manda sumandi byaga. We're just terribly unfortunate that even when we get it, we reject it, we don't reciprocate it, we take it for granted. We do so many things that doesn't really, the Kali Yuga nature is so unfortunate that we don't know how to even appreciate mercy. So he was explaining, therefore, this is where we hear so many verses about the mind. Therefore, our work is to always to prepare our mind, which means our heart, really. And this point about the mind is often translated to the heart, is the word chitta. Always preparing it for Krishna to receive the mercy, which means we always have to see how empty, how hollow our heart is. And therefore, be prepared to face some distress. Because every day doesn't take much to experience some distress either for us, right? Because say we go without a meal for 6 or 8 hours, or we come back after going out and there's no prasadam left, which never happens in Radhadesh, of course, because there's always buckets of prasadam around. But say if somehow or other there's no prasadam, we actually feel a real, like, does anybody, like, I think in this verse we have the Bhakti Prasanabhava Virakti verse, where spiritual life is like eating a good meal. You feel nourishment, you feel benefit, your hunger is relieved, your body is nourished. You feel lots of benefits. It's a good analogy for spiritual life should be that tangible, eating a good meal. Well, our lack of spiritual life should be as tangible as a hungry belly. Like, really, it's like a very... none of us have to be told, bro, you're hungry now, your stomach's empty. She's, I know, it's rumbling like mad, I really need to fill it, I need to put something in my stomach. So staying alert and always going forward in our Krishna consciousness means we should tangibly feel our heart as empty as we feel our belly when we're hungry. And it is that tangible. Because look at Maharaj Parikshit again. Like Maharaj Parikshit, we hear for Bhagavatam, for 7 days he sat down, didn't drink, didn't eat, didn't sleep. We don't hear that he was moaning about it. Maharaj Parikshit wasn't sitting there like, oh, Sukadeva Goswami, could you give us a break for just 2 minutes? Go and have a quick snack or a little drink. That doesn't happen. And interesting, I don't think it happens to anybody there. Sukadeva Goswami obviously also spoke, and if everybody attending, I was thinking about that this morning. Is everybody attending there sat down and also didn't eat or drink for 7 days? I'm not sure we hear that detail. But Maharaj Parikshit, so there was no, he wasn't feeling the distress of his hunger and his thirst. But throughout the narration, we hear of his distress of hearing, for example, like after the fifth canto, Sukadeva Swami just told him about all these hellish planets where people are going to go. Maharaj Parikshit's like, that's horrible. It's like he actually feels distress. Please, talk now about something that they can do to get free from this. And the Sukadeva Swami reciprocates and he tells about how the glories of the holy name and the Ajamil pastime. So Maharaj Parikshit is feeling distress. He's feeling distress, but not hunger distress and thirst distress. So next time we actually get very hungry, we can use that stress of an empty belly to think, well, that's how I should feel about my heart. But why don't we feel it about our heart? Why is it not so tangible? I could say even Radhadesh here, like, I personally feel I have to kind of skip a meal or two to actually feel hunger, because breakfast is so substantial and then lunch is there and I just don't get hungry. So if I have to skip a meal, then you feel hungry. And the same with our heart. Why is our heart not feeling the distress? Why is it not feeling the hunger for the more Krishna conscious? Why not? Because the same thing with eating. Because I must be putting something in there. Something must be going in. What is it? What is it that I'm constantly giving to that space in my heart? It's clearly not Krishna. Because if it was Krishna, I'd be fully Krishna conscious. I would be absorbed in every single name that I recite. I'd be absorbed in the deity. I'd be constantly in humble mood to all the devotees, not just the ones I like or the advanced devotees. We know the symptoms of a proper devotee, and it doesn't take much to see the cavernous gap between what a real devotee is and where my heart is at. So we have to ask ourselves, what is it I'm putting in there that makes me not feel the pain of the gap between me and Krishna, and me and real Krishna consciousness. So looking at ourselves and always trying to see how I'm being affected by this covering energy of Maya, so that I'm, and of course we know it, the covering energy sustains at some point, then the throwing energy will come in, and then we're out. But that won't happen if we stay alert, and probably what it makes reference to when we were this covering energy, that we have to stay a little bit fearful, a little fear, and that's again connected to distress. A little fear is always required. It's very healthy, actually, and this is why modern psychology would differ with us. Oh, fear is some sort of negative thing. No, it's a healthy requirement especially in our Nartanivritti stage, our practicing stage. Because, of course, the expression that we have in relation to distress always, a Vaishnav is, what's the distress about a Vaishnav and distress? A Vaishnav is? But the Sanskrit verse, how do we describe a devotee? A devotee is always in what type of distress? Paradukya dukhi. So here, like Maharaj Parikshit, for a devotee, he has no problem for himself. A devotee has no distress. But for others, he's constantly feeling some distress. Which raises a very interesting point about how do these two things come together. And I think because in material life, the world of duality, we always have things are always two. We have happiness and we have distress. But in spiritual life, we have happiness and distress, and they're one. And of course, how that works, well, we find out when we get there, because please don't ask me at the end how can we experience at the same time. That you'll experience when you get there. And a nice example is of Lord Balaram, after when Krishna's killed Kamsa, and Lord Balaram is finishing off the rest of the Kamsa's relatives, etc. We hear his copper red eyes, but we hear his blissful, smiling, happy face. So Balaram, you can't even... Krishna's got to get into a certain state to start punching someone to bits. So he's really angry, but he sometimes he's really blissful. So any of us, like, it's just, we can't comprehend it, how to be simultaneously blissful and simultaneously angry. But it happens in spiritual life, that's possible. Because either way, they're just platforms for ecstatic service to Krishna. So the devotee is Paradukha Dukhi. He's experiencing distress. For himself, not, but for others, he is. But yeah, at this point about fear. But even when we're going to help someone, there was a nice example I read recently of if someone's in trouble. So the idea: so a Vaishnava sees someone suffering and trouble, a Vaishnava wants to help. But like in the material world, if there's a situation of disaster, like a fire, right? There are buildings on fire, and your job is a fireman. You have to go in and rescue somebody who's obviously in distress. You don't just barge in, right? Us regular people, say we see a fire, we can't just race in. We'll probably end up dying ourselves and not helping the person or causing more difficulty, actually, more problems, if we don't know how to deal with such a disaster situation like a house on fire. So we hear firemen are very expertly trained, and any rescue service people, actually, anybody in the service of rescuing people, they're giving very expert help, even first aid. I remember doing a first aid course years ago. If somebody's got you see somebody lying down, if you go to move them or you go help them, are you okay? You could end up doing them more harm if it's a broke arm or a broken bone. Don't touch them unless you know what you're doing. You want to help, but don't help unless you know what you're doing. So that transfers into spiritual life. You want to help people, but we have to know what we're doing. We have to be aware of what it is. We're going into the material energy, and we're trying to help people in the material world. And therefore, we have to know about the material world. We have to know how dangerous it is. We have to know how contaminating it is. And then we have to know exactly what it is to how to help people. We have to be learned. We have to be knowledgeable. Otherwise, what happens is that we'll get contaminated by the material energy, or we'll get affected by someone else's distressed condition. So, understand this term paradukaduki. It describes a real Vaishnava. He's very, very expert. And therefore, Srila Prabhupada engages anybody in his society to help people by distributing the holy name, by distributing knowledge. But then when it gets more personal, we know we have to be a little bit expert how to help somebody, because it takes some skill, some knowledge, how to. And a Vaishnava is always eager to do that and to know what that is. But we have to be careful. We don't want ourselves to get burned in the fire when we go to help someone. So distress, okay, so I think distress happens in the beginning of Krishna consciousness, and we're coming to it. Distress should continue throughout our Krishna consciousness. Of course, somebody could say also, oh, that sounds very... Oh, but I thought the symptom of devotees to be happy. I can get devotees getting in my case after this class. We're going to be happy, Shananda, not distressed. But in Krishna consciousness, there isn't a separation of the two. The point is, when we really understand Krishna consciousness, there's no separation of the two. And sometimes when we ask a question, we have to see that we don't really know what it means yet, like Balaram's thing. But even in relation to the guru, actually, sometimes an example of a question which indicates a misunderstanding platform is that sometimes I've heard somebody says, if when I'm leaving my body I don't remember Krishna, but I remember my guru, is that okay? Anybody have heard that question being asked? But actually, the person who's asking it is not going to remember either guru or Krishna. Because if you're going to remember one or the other, you're going to remember both, if it's the real thing. If it's the real thing, there's no separation between my guru and Krishna. How can you separate your guru and Krishna? Krishna gives you the spiritual master, the spiritual master gives you Krishna. There isn't a separation when it's real. You think of your spiritual master, you think of his instructions, and you're thinking about Krishna. So the question implies that very likely that person's not going to remember either. Because when you think of your guru, you know you're thinking of Krishna. So when the real thing happens, there's no, the duality of that in neophyte's mind is no longer there. So when a devotee, so our distress, our using a certain element of distress in our spiritual life will make us happy, because it's the platform which makes us come to the temple with more enthusiasm, to pick up our bead bag with more enthusiasm, to offer respect to Prasadam, to the devotees, always staying awake and alert to the situation around us. Bhattavigyan Maharaj said in a very short way, quite stark, he said, so many people come, they get relief from the suffering, they get some happiness, they commit offences, and they go. And they commit offences, and they go. So there's an initial stage of coming and loving it all and getting some happiness. But that's the first symptom of spiritual life is Kleshagni, the relief from some suffering. But unless we stay sharp, that offensive stage will disqualify us. The reality is actually we never get free from distress. Actually, we never get free from distress. Isn't that wonderful news? Everybody happy? We came distressed. We need distress to keep us going. And when we get there, have you heard about what happens in Vrindavan? There's constant distress. I mean, it's like, it makes the distress we have in the material world pathetic. Because even when we get distressed in the material world, we know it doesn't last. After a while, due to karma, it moves along and we get happiness. But in the spiritual world, it's like, whew, it's scary to read about, right? And that's why it's like, every single day, actually, every single day, I did warn you. But the residence of in Krishna's pastime is like, they say when Krishna gets up in the morning and when he comes back in the day, Mother Yashoda is experiencing great distress. Get up first thing in the morning, she gets distressed. Why? Because Krishna's going to go and be with the cows now. So there's a constant distress in her heart that Krishna's going to be gone. And then when he's coming back, all day it's been, we hear just before Mother Yashoda is preparing Krishna's meal, she's constantly running from the kitchen to the end of the village, coming back in, constantly this distress. Is he coming back? Maybe something's happened to him today. All these demons. Is he coming back? I mean, intense distress. And then when he does come back, we hear that the curse of that distress is relieved, but only momentarily. Because the next stress, is everything ready? Is everything all right? Is the lunch, is Krishna's meals right? It's like, phew, it's just continual intense distress in her service to Krishna, her anxiety. And of course, the Pacific one pastime where Krishna really cultivates this is the Kaliya pastime. We hear Krishna, when he's wandering one day and his cow boys and the cows go to the Yamuna and drink some water, and they all fall dead. And then Krishna, of course, looks across his boyfriends and cows and brings them back to life. And then he discovers in the lake this very, very poisonous and demonic snake called Kaliya. So Krishna goes, okay, well, I can't have this. He's poisoning the Yamuna and poisoning my friends and cows. Krishna jumps in and starts taking on Kaliya. Back in Vrindavan, suddenly everybody sees these like rumbling of clouds in the sky and shaking of earth and all these sort of bad omens. And they freak out, especially Mother Yashoda again. She freaks out because Balaram didn't go that day. And Mother Yashoda always, when Krishna was going to the forest, she always told Balaram, at least Balaram, you please protect Krishna. Make sure he eats his lunch. Make sure he stays protected. Make sure he doesn't get lost. Make sure he takes rest. But Balaram didn't go that day. And then all these inauspicious omens are taking place. So everybody in Vrindavan kind of drops what they're doing and then starts running out of Vrindavan and then sees Krishna's footprints and chases the footprints to come. And they, even when they get close, they see Krishna wrapped in these black coils of like this mini-headed serpent. And like, oh, and then it's just too much. Literally, we hear most of the residents they don't collapse. Because it's so intense, even though their distress is so intense, they can't even move to fall over and collapse. But then Mother Yashoda, she does, she kind of wants to go into the Yamuna and she stopped. And then the cowherd men want to go in and Balaram stops them. He says, no. But they're standing there in this intense distress. But we hear, of course, what's going on is this distress. It invokes in their hearts such a unlimited sense of the depth of their love for Krishna that it just overwhelms them in their relationship of love for Krishna with Krishna. So the distress is a wonderful, wonderful platform for becoming statically Krishna conscious. So, and of course, and that we often hear. and I'll finish with these points about from the song. So many acharyas we hear, we read songs that are often make us go like, whew, too much. I can only take so much. But here, so just even a brief selection of songs from our songbook in Manashiksha. Narottam Das Thakur says, Narottam Borodukhi. Narottam Das Thakur, the acharya, is taking the position that he is very unhappy. Actually, he is representing ourselves. He says, my dear Lord, I am very unhappy. Therefore, I am praying to Lord Nityananda to make me happy. Please, keep me in a corner of your lotus feet. So that impetus to prayer is coming from a certain sense of, I'm unhappy. The next song, Rupa Manjari, Shirupa Manjari Pada. By the venom of the snake of separation from you, my soul has wasted away, and my life is ever afflicted and distressed. O Rupa Manjari, please be merciful and give me the shade of your lotus feet. Narottam Das has taken refuge. There's a couple here. Later on, this song we don't sing very much at all. Dainya O Prapti. O Hari, O my merciful Lord, O glories to you, the Lord of Radha. Many times I have avoided you, but this time please take me as your own. O Lord, after wandering through many wombs, I have taken refuge in you. Be merciful and deliver this wretched soul by your divine power. O lover of Radha, you are the cause of the universe and the life of the universe. Without you, no one has anything. I have considered that within this world there is no one except you who can deliver this fallen soul. And the previous song, Paramakaruna, Lochan Das Thakur regrets that he's entrapped by sense gratification. He addresses himself, my dear mind, you are entrapped in this sense gratification process and you have no attraction for chanting Hare Krishna. Since you have no attraction for the lotus feet of Lord Chaitanya and Lord Nityananda, what can I say? I can simply think of my misfortune. Yamaraj, the superintendent of death, is punishing me by not allowing me to be attracted by this movement. So we are not short of examples of our acharyas. That's why we hear that they're setting an example for us as sadhakas to keep some essence, some sense of this mood in our sadhana. And for them, it's not imitation. Because in the real thing, they're also feeling some distress. And in Burjambu's Japa book, he actually mentions, he gives a little paraphrase, I can only paraphrase, this getting some ruchi, or the moving from nista to ruchi, is that the devotee thinks, how eager I am to hear the poisonous gossip of the goings-on of the material world. How eager my ears prick up if I hear somebody's had a fight or somebody's had some problem. How eager our ears are to hear it. And then when we open the Bhagavatam, how much, and Jamaspi was mentioning yesterday too, we struggle with sleep when we hear the Bhagavatam. But if the discussion is some sort of discussion about the material world or again some sort of gossip, we're very alert, very awake. So what can we do? So whenever we should take those moments and use them as a platform to turn to Krishna. A little something. And again, it's not that this distress is an external thing, by the way. It's not like Bhakti Ripu was getting in my case quite a lot recently for going around being looking Mr. Down of the Mouth and Mr. And I think that's because that's my, I explained to my Kanista mentality of understanding this point. But the real thing, actually, people shouldn't see. It's a bhajan. It's an element of your bhajan. And bhajan is all something secret, something we keep in the heart. So as an awareness of my low level, it's not like, oh, Prabhu's, please give me your mercy. I'm such a fallen, lowly wretch. It's like, okay, it's nice, but that's not, how real is that? The point is we have to keep it real. And so Krishna will only give us a little bit. He won't give us the full sense of how vacant our heart is, that'd be too much. In our heart, Krishna gives us little bits, little glimpses. Well, and with those little glimpses, we should take them to pick up the bead bag, and give that little more effort to open the Bhagavatam, hear with some, hear with the desire to actually get purified, associate with the devotees in such a way to appreciate Krishna's given me all these wonderful Vaishnavas to hear about him with, to serve. Always take it and always to stay alert. And therefore, hopefully Krishna will not, our offences will not affect us so much, and we will stay in Krishna consciousness. Okay, has anybody any questions, comments, or corrections? Pandava. That's true, and I could. That's how we shouldn't be. We shouldn't be scared of how serious we have to become. I would say. I once gave a presentation on how our spiritual program here. Srila Prabhupada's spiritual program for members of ISKCON is what I call practicing bhava. We're not practicing sadhakas, we're practicing bhava. And as we know in the states, like anartiviti, nista, ruchi, shakti, bhava, there's nine symptoms, indirect symptoms or secondary symptoms of bhava. And like, if you look at them, every time Prabhupada speaks and in his purports, he's encouraging us to practice this bhava. And one of them is to not waste a second outside Krishna's service. One is to hope against hope. So here, next instruction, Rupa Goswami explains how we have to have certain characteristics. We have to be patient, enthusiasm, and confident. But then in these symptoms of bhava, it's the same symptoms. We have to be enthusiastic, patience, and confidence, but it's taken to a higher level. It's really intense enthusiasm, extreme patience in Krishna, and 100% confidence in Krishna. But it's the same symptoms actually nine symptoms. Secondary or indirect? What are they called? Indirect. I mean, we know there's the external body symptoms of bhava, the hair standing on end, the rolling on the ground, da-da, but the indirect symptoms are what we're concerned about. And one of them is the hope against hope, which really means like, God, there is no hope for me. I mean, it's just like no hope. The pure real devotee really gets more and more, he becomes exposed to what I've done in my relationship to Krishna and how, and in that intense awareness of his poor state, he really gives himself to Krishna. So I would say possibly just a distressful state is where it just increases the intensity of how much I want to be with Krishna. Will just increase when it's done in Krishna consciousness. Again, it should not be a mundane thing. We're not talking about lamenting. We're talking about spiritual emotions here, not the mundane variation. So true, we have to be careful to impregnate the word distress with its Krishna conscious purport. But it can be. Because these things are very distressful. Mahaprabhu.
And I was thinking
Yeah. Everything has to be natural, and that's why we don't go around going, I'm the fallen, the most fallen, the most fallen, of the most fallen, the most fallen, the most fallen. Yeah, give us a break, that's just imitation. I'll just add to your first point about feeling others' liberation and feeling others' distress. I just heard Prabhupada say this morning that there's three types of happiness, bhakti, mukti, and seva. I haven't heard him say this much. So sense gratification, liberation, and then real happiness is devotional. So we all know that the sense gratification of bhakti, we're all aware, tangibly aware of it. It doesn't take much to like see something nice that our eyes are drawn towards, and something mundane, our ears are drawn. We know, it's very tangible. But the mukti, like becoming aware of in our heart, we actually desire the happiness of liberation, which we know in our philosophy is considered a much more dangerous. It's the greater obstacle in our path. Bhakti, we can get rid of quite easily, but the desire for mukti is most dangerous. And therefore, we have to counteract that. And one way is that we should, and Tribhuvana Prabhu was always very keen on this point, that while it's a symptom of Krishna consciousness to be peaceful and to be happy, we shouldn't use that as a platform that I want to be happy, I'm here to be peaceful. And he always says, Greece quote Prabhupada saying, we should always take some anxiety for Krishna. Some anxiety for Krishna. And that goes back to Pandavu's thing, an anxiety. And of course, so that anxiety, when it's, my point was, when it matures, it'll increase. And that's why we do things like we go out and we help people, because we take on some anxiety with these people suffering. Actually, Prabhupada said that somewhere. Prahlad Maharaj too. Some nice point about taking on their anxiety. And by taking on their anxiety, we've no more anxiety of ourselves. What you were saying. So. We have to look out for, are we here for shanti, shanti, shanti? Is that our, we're looking for a peaceful situation in Krishna consciousness? Then we have to be very careful of that. Very careful. That means in our heart we're cultivating that, we're not aware of it, but we're cultivating our desire for liberation. But a devotee is not interested in liberation. Horrible. I want to be absorbed in my anxiety of Krishna's service that I'm meant to be doing for him. So we should take on some anxiety for Krishna, and that will not allow that weed to grow in our heart of liberation. Yeah. Okay. Ladies, thanks so much.
Thank you.
And that's why in Krishna consciousness, Krishna consciousness is the real oneness. And that's why sometimes we, again, the point I made, we sometimes ask questions that create a duality in spiritual topics that don't exist at all. So the question actually shouldn't be asked because it's not relevant. Actually, in spiritual life, the awareness of our low state, and then are willing to help somebody, and ultimately our relationship with Krishna. It's all the one energy. It's just, yeah, it's Krishna. Ultimately, Krishna's always got one energy, but it's due to variety and taste and relationships, it gets expressed different ways. So yeah, there's no dichotomy. And that's, of course, some people thought I've made objected to my excessive presentation on distress, but ultimately, that was the overall point. That it's all leading. It's all meant to lead for us to take more seriously our Krishna consciousness. And on that note, Shri Chaitanya Charitamrita ki, Srila Prabhupada ki.
That's most loved, right? Because of the